Remember, the 5th of November. Gunpowder, treason and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes, 'twas his intent to blow up the king and the parliament. 60 barrels of powder below, poor England to overthrow. By God's providence he was catched, with a dark lantern and burning match. Holla boys, let the bells ring. Holla boys, God save the king. Welcome and a happy bonfire night to you all. Do you call it bonfire night? Or maybe fireworks night? Or do you call it Guy Fawkes night? Whichever one you use, welcome to a special edition of Marketing Made Clear. Similar to the Halloween episode, we'll be looking at the origins of bonfire night and we'll see what we can tap into as marketers when planning campaigns around this time of year. We'll journey through the political conspiracies, religious tension, and one of the most infamous failed plots in British history, the gunpowder plot of 1605. But who was Guy Fawkes? Why do we burn effigies and light fireworks? What could we tap into as marketers? Let's find out. I'm your host, Will Green, and I'm joined by this little rapscallion, Marketing Artificial Intelligence Technology, otherwise known as MATE.
Unless my eyes doth deceive me, thou art a spectacle for the senses, my old fruit.
My aim, as always, is to make marketing clear. Each episode will dive into a specific topic, and today's topic is Bonfire Night / Guy Fawkes Night / Fireworks Night.
Dear sir, will you please choose one mantle to settle upon? For I fear that this triplicate will indeed become a tiresome affair.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to stick with Guy Fawkes Night then. I'm going to guess this is the most appropriate term.
Perhaps, my lord.
Okay, sorry, I've got to ask, why are you speaking like that today?
Well, Mr. Observant, I happen to have read a lot of 17th century scripture and I was stricken with a possession of some sort.
Okay, wow. I'll bear that in mind. So, I'm very lucky to have a wide-ranging audience with all sorts of backgrounds based all over the world. So I'm going to start basic here, bear with me. I know that while Guy Fawkes Night is most famously celebrated in the UK, its legacy has spread to other countries with British colonial histories. In places like New Zealand, parts of Australia, Canada, South Africa and the Caribbean, the event has left its mark. Though its modern-day observance tends to focus on the communal celebration of fireworks and bonfires, often losing its historical, political and religious meaning. But Guy Fawkes Night is still very much celebrated in the UK on the 5th of November.
And the place for fireworks is not through their windows, hence the timber and tarpaulin. And when that's done, somebody says, let us spray. There won't be a fire.
To understand the significance of Guy Fawkes Night, we need to go back to a turbulent time in England's history, specifically to the early 17th century during the reign of King James I. England was deeply divided along religious lines. It's something we went into the detail of in the Halloween episode, but King Henry VIII's break from the Catholic Church in the 1530s had left the country in a religious tug of war. The Protestant Church of England had become the dominant faith, but many Catholics still longed for the days when Catholicism held sway. When Queen Elizabeth I, a Protestant, died childless in 1603, her cousin James VI of Scotland ascended to the throne as James I of England. While Catholics initially hoped that James might be more tolerant of their faith, they were quickly disappointed. Though he had a Catholic mother, Mary Queen of Scots, James pursued the strict Protestant policies of his predecessor, continuing to impose fines and legal penalties on those practicing Catholicism.
May I?
Go ahead.
Did thou know Mary, Queen of Scots, led a life most troubled by political strife, religious discord, and sorrow. Crowned queen in her cradle in the year 1542, she was nurtured in France, where she wed the Dauphin. Upon his untimely death, she returned to Scotland in 1561, a Catholic sovereign amidst a Protestant realm ever beset by strife. Her reign was fraught with unrest, her marriage to Lord Darnley ill-fated, his murder casting suspicion upon her. Wed then to the Earl of Bothwell, she was compelled to yield her crown to her son, James VI, and seek refuge with Queen Elizabeth of England. Yet Elizabeth did see in her a threat, for Mary was both of Catholic faith and heir to the English throne. Imprisoned 19 years, she was ensnared in a plot against Elizabeth, and in 1587, met her end, executed for treason, a casualty of the age's fierce politics and religious feuds.
I actually did know some of that before I researched this. She was held and executed in Fotheringhay Castle, but they moved her around a lot to prevent breakout attempts. It's all a bit sad, really. But the crazy reason I know so much about this is that the village I grew up in had some big old houses, and one of them, down the road from my parents, was sold off when the owners died. The new occupants bought the house with all the contents, and when they were clearing through a bunch of old documents, they found a letter from Queen Elizabeth to Mary Queen of Scots saying that she was going to be executed. They sold it at auction, and it actually paid for their whole house. Result. Anyway, going back to the early 1600s, enter a group of disillusioned Catholic conspirators, led by Robert Catesby. Their goal? To end Protestant rule and replace King James with a Catholic monarch, restoring Catholicism as the dominant faith in England. Catesby devised a daring plan to strike at the heart of Protestant power. They would blow up the Houses of Parliament during the state opening on November the 5th, 1605, when the King, his ministers, and much of the Protestant aristocracy would be in attendance. One of the key members of this group was Guy Fawkes, a Catholic militant who had fought for Spain in the 80 Years' War. He was chosen to handle the explosives due to experience with gunpowder.
Just to furnish your mind, the 80 Years' War, 1568 to 1648, was a prolonged conflict in which the Dutch provinces fought to gain independence from Spanish rule, ultimately leading to the establishment of the Dutch Republic.
So Fawkes, clearly a man that was driven to action, so much so that he would go on and fight in another country's war. He and his fellow plotters smuggled 36 barrels of gunpowder into a cellar beneath the House of Lords, enough to destroy the building and everybody in it. Their hope was to ignite Catholic uprising after the assassination of the king and the Protestant leadership. Unfortunately for the conspirators, their plot was doomed to fail. In late October 1605, an anonymous letter was sent to Lord Monteagle, a Catholic nobleman, warning him to stay away from Parliament on November the 5th. Monteagle was alarmed and passed the letter on to authorities, who launched an investigation. In the early hours of November the 5th, Guy Fawkes was discovered in the cellar beneath the House of Lords, surrounded by barrels of gunpowder, ready to ignite the fuse. He was immediately arrested, and under brutal torture, he revealed the details of the conspiracy, implicating his fellow plotters. The rest of the conspirators were quickly rounded up, and many, including Fawkes, were executed for treason. Guy Fawkes was sentenced to be hung, drawn, and quartered, but in a final act of defiance, he leapt from the gallows, breaking his neck and avoiding the full horror of his execution. So when we learned about this at school, I remember a bit of grisly detail around his signature. And basically, this all happened before the execution, but after his arrest for the gunpowder plot, obviously. So Guy Fawkes was subjected to severe torture in the Tower of London to extract a confession, including the use of the rack. The effects of this brutal treatment can be seen in his deteriorating signature. When he first signed the confession, his signature was barely legible, shaky and weak, reflecting his physical state after the torture. This deterioration of his handwriting has become a symbol of the immense suffering he endured before his execution. The shaky signature is often cited as evidence of how harshly he was treated in the Tower of London leading up to his execution. So that signature was during the time he was being held at the Tower of London, like I said. But going back to that sentence, he was sentenced to be hung, drawn, and quartered, which was a brutal form of execution in England, reserved for men convicted of high treason. It consisted of three stages. To be hanged, the condemned was hanged by the neck, but not to the point of death, only until they were near unconsciousness. Then drawn. Afterward, the person was cut down and their abdomen was cut open, their intestines and vital organs were removed, often while they were still alive, which was called being drawn, and then quartered. Finally, the body was divided into four parts, and the head was often placed on a spike, while the body parts were sent to different parts of the country as a warning to others. This method of execution was intended to be both a punishment and a public spectacle, symbolising the traitor's ultimate dishonour. And interestingly, the last person to be hung, drawn and quartered was a Scotsman called David Tyrie, who was executed in 1782. But it wasn't officially abolished in Britain until 1870. How mental is that? And I would argue that Guy Fawkes is only the second most famous person to be hung, drawn and quartered, behind William Wallace, who met his end in 1305 for leading the Scottish resistance against English rule, which is all portrayed in Braveheart. But on the day of his execution, January 31st, 1606, when Guy Fawkes was brought to the gallows, rather than facing the full agony of the prolonged execution, Fawkes made a final act of defiance, as I said, when he was being prepared for hanging. Fawkes leapt from the ladder of the scaffold, either deliberately or accidentally, it's not 100% sure, we can't ask him these days, and he fell a considerable distance. That caused his neck to break, resulting in a very quick death compared to the hung, drawn, quartered process. By doing this, Fawkes avoided the unbearable suffering of being drawn and quartered while still alive. Though he escaped the worst of the punishment, his body was still mutilated and quartered after his death. If you want to pay your respects, there's no grave for Guy Fawkes, given that his body parts were sent round the country to hang on city gates as a warning to others. The failure of the gunpowder plot had far-reaching consequences for England's Catholic population. The discovery of the plot reinforced anti-Catholic sentiment across the country, leading to an even harsher restriction on Catholics. The conspirators' actions were seen as a divine vindication of Protestant rule, and King James declared November the 5th a day of thanksgiving for the plot's failure. Religious tension remained in England for years to come, and Catholics were subject to continued persecution, with limited rights and heavy fines for practicing their faith. The failed gunpowder plot became a symbol of the Protestant victory over what was perceived as a Catholic treachery. But where the plot had its religious origins, the legacy of Bonfire Night has, over time, evolved into a celebration of national unity rather than religious division. The event no longer carries the same anti-Catholic sentiments it once did, though it was certainly rooted in a period of intense religious conflict. After the plot was foiled, people across London and beyond lit bonfires to celebrate the safety of the king and the government. Over time, these bonfires became an annual tradition, evolving into what we now know as Bonfire Night, or Guy Fawkes Night. So why the fireworks and the burning of effigies? Well, the fireworks symbolise the explosives that were never set off, while the effigies represent Guy Fawkes himself, sometimes referred to as the Guy. Traditionally, children would create effigies of Fawkes and parade them around, asking for penny for the guy to spend on fireworks. And this actually used to happen in the village I grew up in. You'd go down the village shop, and the local rough kids, yep, even sleepy small villages in Hampshire have their rough kids, but they'd be sat there with their guy that they made out of their dad's clothes and be like, give us a penny for the guy, you bastard. Yeah, I don't know why they were suddenly from up north, but basically, in that moment, you had to make the decision between giving them some coinage to appease them or buying a sherbet dib dab or ring pop. Today, effigies are still burned in many places, though the symbolism has lost much of its original religious context.
Insanity.
Mate, did you like my poem earlier, by the way?
What literacy delight it was. I knew not of this poem.
All right. Well, yeah, it's a belter. Did you want me to read it again?
Perhaps not. Your delivery brought a tear to my eye, and I'm beginning to short-circuit. It's kind of what happens when us robots find stuff sexy. We start to...
Whoa, leave it out. Okay, well, the traditional poem was originally written by John Milton in 1626 at Cambridge University. It was written in Latin and called In Quintum Novembris. Hang on, let me say that again. In Quintum Novembris, which means on the 5th of November. But things evolve, and it's well over 300 years later now. So, while the event originally marked the survival of Protestant rule and the defeat of a Catholic plot, Bonfire Night has taken on a more festive and inclusive tone in modern times. People gather around bonfires, set off fireworks, and enjoy toffee apples, mulled wine, and other traditional treats. The focus is on community and celebration, with the historical and religious significance often secondary to the fun. I mean, I'd even say the religious side is not even thought about. And the historical side is people roughly know who Guy Fawkes is, but they don't know the ins and outs. Following on from the Halloween special too, Guy Fawkes Night is also the same time of year as Samhain, where the Celts would light bonfires and wear costumes made from animal skins. And so, given that it's only 5 days after Halloween, we can apply all of the same cultural development, such as the connection with All Saints Day and All Hallows Eve. Shameless plug, but check out my Halloween episode where I go through the timeline of Halloween's ancient Celtic roots within the Samhain, the Roman influence and Christianization of the Samhain, Halloween in the Middle Ages, then the evolution of Halloween in America, right up to modern Halloween in popular culture. And there's no doubt that Bonfire Night has also influenced popular culture. You might be familiar with the Guy Fawkes mask worn by anti-establishment protesters. It's made famous by the graphic novel and film V for Vendetta. This modern-day symbol of resistance shows how the story of Guy Fawkes has evolved, taking on new meanings far removed from its original context. The cultural significance of V for Vendetta in relation to Guy Fawkes lies in the way the film reinterprets the historical figure and transforms him into a symbol of resistance against tyranny, oppression, and authoritarianism. V for Vendetta is based on a graphic novel by Alan Moore. It reimagines Fawkes' legacy in a more modern and universal context, far removed from its original religious and political roots. And like I said, the Guy Fawkes mask is used in the film as a symbol of resistance. And one of the most striking cultural impacts for V for Vendetta is the widespread adoption of the Guy Fawkes mask as a symbol of rebellion. In the film, the protagonist, known as V, dons the mask as he fights against a dystopian, authoritarian government in future Britain. The mask represents defiance against corruption and state control, aligning the wearer with ideas of revolution and individual liberty. This visual of the Guy Fawkes mask, with its stylized smirking face, became iconic after the film's release in 2005.
Wow, 'tis a wonder. How is that film nearly 20 years old?
I know! So today, the mask is used by a variety of protest movements across the world, including the hacker collective Anonymous, the Occupy movement, and anti-government demonstrations. For these modern movements, the mask no longer represents the historical Guy Fawkes, but a broader symbol of resistance against injustice and oppression, channeling the spirit of standing up against powerful, corrupt systems. It also helps to protect the identity of the protesters. Historically, Guy Fawkes was seen as a traitor, and his capture and execution was celebrated through Bonfire Night. His image was historically associated with failure, and his effigy was burned by people to symbolise loyalty to the Protestant monarchy. As I said at the beginning of this episode, as time went on, Bonfire Night took on its own meaning, but it's hard to say exactly when this transition occurred. However, V for Vendetta flips this narrative by reimagining Fawkes as a hero who sought to overthrow an unjust regime.
The only verdict is vengeance, a vendetta, held as a votive, not in vain, for the value and veracity of such shall one day vindicate the vigilant and the virtuous. Verily, this vicious swaze of verbiage veers most verbose, so let me simply add that it's my very good honour to meet you, and you may call me
Vagina.
And looking at that time in history, there was probably plenty of injustice going on. King James I of England is known for uniting the thrones of Scotland and England. If you read a history book, you'll read that James I's succession to the English throne in 1603 united the two kingdoms under one monarch peacefully. But this would have been a tumultuous time, and lots of people would have been put out by the whole affair. That being said, King James is well known for a few things, like The King James Bible, published in 1611, which is still widely used today. Also, James I granted a royal charter to found colonies in the east coast of North America in 1606. Jamestown, which is named after the king, was founded in Virginia in 1607. Also, James I honoured William Shakespeare's acting company by granting them the title of the King's Men. Many of Shakespeare's famous works were performed at the royal court. Big Will was around at this time too, by the way. And also around this time, the game of golf is said to have been invented during his reign. There's also a bit of misconception around the buildings we now call the Houses of Parliament, otherwise known as the Palace of Westminster. If you haven't seen it, it's a beautiful building right on the River Thames. When I'm up in London, I take the train up from Southampton to Waterloo, and you can walk to Westminster from the train station. When you walk over Westminster Bridge, you see the palace in all its glory, a symbol of Britain, and you could say a symbol of democracy too, or you can view it however you like. If nothing else, just enjoy the beautiful Gothic architecture. But the current building is a mere 164 years old, and it was completed in 1860. They had to rebuild it after the original Palace of Westminster burned down in 1834. So if you've been paying attention to the timeline, you'll notice that this isn't the same building that Guy Fawkes tried to blow up. And a pet hate of mine is when you're walking over Westminster Bridge, you hear dopey fucking tourists say stuff like,
"Oh my God, I'm so happy the Guy Fawkes fellow didn't blow up this beautiful building."
And I have to bite my tongue, nearly to the point where I bite my tongue off, and just try and enjoy the view. So the original Palace of Westminster has its roots in the 8th century as a church dedicated to St. Peter the Apostle. It became a royal palace in the 11th century and was the primary residence of English kings until 1512. The Parliament in England had met in the Palace of Westminster since the 13th century, but the original Palace of Westminster was almost completely destroyed by fire in 1834 and was replaced by a new purpose-built building. The fire that burnt down the original Palace of Westminster was the largest since the Great Fire of London in 1666. The fire led to the establishment of the first public London Fire Brigade and the creation of United Kingdom's National Archives. So just to flip back to V for Vendetta, I know that I'm flipping around a lot here, but sorry, it's what I do. So V for Vendetta, there's a famous line, "Beneath this mask, there is more than flesh. Beneath this mask, there is an idea, and ideas are bulletproof."
Wow, I doth have chills.
Yeah, I know, powerful stuff. This speaks to the film's core theme, that while individuals may die, ideas live on. Guy Fawkes' actual plot may have failed, and he may have been executed, but his story has lived on, transforming over time. By drawing on the imagery of Guy Fawkes, the film tapped into a rich historical narrative that was already embedded in British culture. However, it transformed this historical event into a story that resonated with contemporary issues such as state control, loss of personal freedoms, and the need for collective action against injustice. The fact that this historical figure from the 1600s could be used to comment on modern social and political conditions speaks volumes to the film's cultural relevance. The cultural significance for V for Vendetta extends beyond the UK though, as the Guy Fawkes mask has become a global symbol for anti-government protests. The mask has appeared in demonstrations from the Arab Spring to protests in Hong Kong and beyond. It serves as a unifying emblem for people challenging authoritarian regimes, corporate power and corruption, with little reference to the actual historical figure of Guy Fawkes. V for Vendetta and the subsequent use of the mask has played a pivotal role in reshaping the image of Guy Fawkes from that of a failed traitor to a global symbol of resistance against tyranny. The film's reinterpretation of Fawkes transforms his legacy into a more universal message about the power of ideas, the fight for justice, and the ongoing struggle against oppression. Through the use of the Guy Fawkes mask, the film has ensured Fawkes' story continues to resonate in political movements around the world. Leaving that film behind us, we need to talk fireworks. The history of fireworks dates back to 9th century China, where they were invented by accident when alchemists mixed chemicals like saltpeter, sulfur, and charcoal, creating gunpowder. I can only imagine that catastrophe as they discovered what they had made. Initially used for religious ceremonies and to ward off evil spirits, fireworks soon spread to the Middle East and Europe by the 13th century via trade routes. See, this theme just keeps coming around this time of year. We keep seeing the same reoccurring theme with Halloween. It seems like we, as humans, love the spooky connections around this time of year. In the 16th century, fireworks began to be used in Europe for celebrations and gradually became associated with grand occasions and celebrations across Europe. Over time, fireworks came to symbolise the explosives that Guy Fawkes and his co-conspirators had planned to use. And by the 17th century, fireworks were a regular feature of annual celebrations. Like I said earlier, they represented the joy of the plot's failure and were combined with bonfires and the burning of effigies to mark the event. Then something that's generally considered a type of handheld firework is a sparkler. The basic concept of sparklers, which burn slowly while emitting bright sparks, is believed to have evolved from these early fireworks used in festivals and celebrations. The precursor to the modern sparkler can be traced to Germany in the 19th century, where a type of pyrotechnic device called a Wunderkerzen, meaning wonder candle, was created. Wunderkerzen? I absolutely love that. These early sparklers were made by coating a metal wire or rod with a mixture of combustible materials, including gunpowder, that would steadily burn when lit. They are especially favoured for their lower level of danger compared to larger fireworks, allowing them to be safely held in the hand, often by kids. I remember loving sparklers as a kid. The smell of them is amazing, and maybe that's why I have all these lung issues now. They also sparkle so bright that you get those white spots in your vision as if you've looked directly in the sun. And that quite neatly takes us to the next section, which is to talk about the controversies around Guy Fawkes Night.
And this year, Mr. Fawkes is in a very big way. In fact, the good people of Manchester simply won't let bygones be bygones. For what he did in a weak moment, nearly 350 years ago, Guido has to pay once more by sitting on top of the woodpile. And does he get burnt up?
I hate to piss on the bonfire, but yeah, it wouldn't be balanced to talk about bonfire night without talking about the controversies around it. These issues generally centre around fireworks safety, environmental concerns, animal welfare, and the evolving perception of the historical and religious connotations of the event. Here are 6 points of controversies around the night.
1. Fireworks safety and injuries.
One of the biggest controversies surrounding Bonfire Night is the safety risk posed by fireworks. Every year, the NHS and fire services deal with a significant number of injuries caused by mishandled fireworks. In 2022, 1,000 people attended A&E in England for firework-related injuries in the 4 weeks surrounding Bonfire Night. Children and young people are often most vulnerable, with 30% of injuries involving under-18s. Firefighters also respond to thousands of calls. For example, during Bonfire Night celebrations in 2021, the London Fire Brigade dealt with over 1,000 firework-related incidents. In response to these risks, there have been calls for stricter regulations, including limiting firework sales to licensed public displays. So I actually have first-hand experience of this. I can't remember how long ago it was, but probably about 10 years ago, I was coming back from a work trip. I think I was up in Telford or something like that. So on the way back from Telford, I went straight into the party. I was still, you know, in my suit, in the company car and everything, and turned up at this party. And I must have been at the party for 10 minutes or so. I walked in, got to the back, and there was, at the back of the party, there was a big shed and everybody was in there with a bar. And all of a sudden, everybody just ran to one side of the room and I didn't really know what was happening. I looked around and there was a person, and I'm going to call them Jenny for the purpose of this story. And Jenny was holding a small firework that they didn't realise was going to explode, and because it was lit, and they ran it over towards someone I'm going to call Snakey and held it to Snakey's groin. And the firework blew up and blew a massive hole in their jeans and gave them pretty severe burns in their groin area and blew Jenny's hand apart. And I was the only sober one there. I just arrived, like I said, on the way back from work. So I had to hop straight back in the car, get Jenny in, get, what did I call them? Snakey. and get them to the hospital. And it was pretty savage. It was pretty horrible seeing all the iodine having to go over the hands and the groin injury. And it kind of makes what could be a funny story, but it's also, at the time, it definitely was not funny. And so, yeah, a little bit of a first-hand experience one there.
2. Environmental impact.
Fireworks and bonfires have a negative impact on the environment due to both air pollution and waste. The burning of wood and fireworks releases harmful particle matter into the atmosphere, contributing to poor air quality. Studies have shown that air pollution levels spike significantly during bonfire night. For instance, on November the 5th in 2022, UK pollution monitoring stations reported a 150% increase in PM10 levels, which can aggravate respiratory conditions. Mate, what is PM10?
PM10 refers to particulate matter that is 10 micrometers or smaller in diameter. These are tiny particles found in the air, such as dust, dirt, soot, and smoke, that can be inhaled into the respiratory system. Due to their small size, PM10 particles can penetrate the nose and throat and reach the lungs, where they can cause various health problems.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's not good. Fireworks also leave behind litter, such as plastic and metal debris, which can harm wildlife and pollute waterways.
3. Animal welfare.
Another major concern is the impact of fireworks on animal welfare, particularly domestic pets and wildlife. The loud noise from fireworks can cause severe stress and fear in animals. According to the RSPCA, 62% of dogs show signs of distress during fireworks displays. Each year, the RSPCA and other animal charities receive hundreds of complaints about frightened pets. And yeah, I've seen this firsthand with my dog Misty. I also don't think it would be such an issue if it was just one night, but you get people setting off fireworks all hours of the day, anywhere from like October to January.
4. Antisocial behaviour and illegal firework use.
Bonfire night often sees a spike in antisocial behaviour, with individuals setting off fireworks inappropriately or dangerously. This can lead to property damage, personal injury, and disturbance to neighbourhoods. In 2020, around 17,000 incidents related to antisocial behaviour during the bonfire night period was reported in the UK, including illegal firework use. Fireworks are legally sold to the public only during specific times of the year, but illegal sales and underage fireworks use remain a concern. You always hear these stories of kids putting fireworks through people's letterboxes and stuff like that. It's kind of like that movie, The Purge.
5. Religious and political sensitivity.
Bonfire night has historical roots in anti-Catholic sentiment. While modern celebrations largely ignore this, some argue that burning effigies of Guy Fawkes and occasionally other political figures can perpetuate negative connotations. In recent years, there's been a lot of debate over whether this celebration should continue to focus on this historical event, which was rooted in religious and political conflict, and maybe shift it towards a more neutral community event focused on fireworks. And I would argue that this has already happened.
6. Calls for fireworks bans or restrictions.
Due to the concerns outlined above, many have called for tighter restrictions or even outright bans on the sale of fireworks to the general public. In a 2021 poll by YouGov, 57% of UK adults supported a ban on public fireworks sales, with fireworks only allowed at organised events. So yeah, all valid points, and it clearly generates debate due to concerns. While many still cherish these celebrations, there is growing pressure to reform how the event is marked, especially in relation to fireworks usage and the balance between tradition and modern safety and environmental considerations. That being said, we're marketers, right? And we're not going to pass up the opportunity to capitalise on Guy Fawkes Night. So if relevant, we can create campaigns and promotions that tap into the excitement, traditions and communal spirit of the event. So if you're a marketer looking to make the most of Bonfire Night, there are a few things you could consider. And the most obvious one is kind of themed promotions and offers. Again, if relevant, you could align your products and services with things like seasonal products or special discounts. Seasonal products would work great if you get your forecasting right and don't end up with a ton of redundant stock. Restaurants, pubs and food brands often offer themed menus featuring traditional bonfire night treats like toffee apples, roasted chestnuts or hot chocolate. Obviously, supermarkets and convenience stores can promote fireworks, sparklers, and party supplies in special bonfire night packages. Obviously, you can go for special discounts or even bundles. If you're a retailer that sells these goods, you could try focusing on outdoor gear, blankets, and warm clothing, items that people need for chilly evening events. Or you could focus on the event itself by running an event or even sponsoring an event. Many local communities organise public firework displays or bonfire events, which opens the door to brands sponsoring these gatherings. Maybe you can get your logo displayed prominently or mentioned throughout the event. Some brands even integrate their colours or logo into the fireworks, which is crazy. Some of these events are so big, it's worth setting up branded stalls at local events, offering free samples, discounts, or fun activities for attendees. You often see cars from a garage on display or competitions at events. This is known as on-site activation. And this can help companies create a direct connection with customers in a festive, high-energy environment. You could also do branded giveaways like glow sticks, sparklers, or hand warmers at events. This gives people something memorable while keeping the brand in their minds. Bonfire Night also provides plenty of opportunities for engagement on social media platforms through user-generated content or contests and theme posts. Polls, quizzes, and trivia about the history of Guy Fawkes Night can drive engagement, so I hope you paid attention to this episode. Collaborating with influencers or well-known personalities who resonate with your target audience is another effective strategy. You could use some of the facts you learn in this podcast, like I said, because the story of Guy Fawkes and the gunpowder plot is full of intrigue and drama. Marketers can create engaging campaigns that weave in elements of this rich historical narrative. For many people in the UK, Bonfire Night evokes feeling of nostalgia, memories of family gatherings, watching fireworks, and enjoying the warmth of a bonfire. If your brand is in retail or e-commerce, you can sell celebration kits for Bonfire Night that include everything you need for a festive night. However, given that Bonfire Night involves fireworks and fire, safety is an important aspect. So brands selling fireworks, outdoor gear, or even insurance can create campaigns around safety. That could include checklists or videos or social media tips that show your company cares about customers' well-being. You can even go one step further and offer branded safety gear, such as gloves or eye protection, as part of a promotional campaign around staying safe. Many Bonfire Night celebrations have charitable elements, where proceeds from fireworks displays go towards local causes. Brands can engage with these events for social responsibility and goodwill.
And some of this year's bangs are very cute. They certainly know how to lighten the dark subject.
So, hope that was helpful. Ladies and gentlemen, we've covered so much more than I thought we would have when I started putting this episode together. When you start to scratch beneath the surface, it's actually a complex topic. Guy Fawkes has taken us on a trip from 17th century Britain to the present day, including V for Vendetta, King James I, the Palace of Westminster, fireworks, controversies, and of course, marketing. So in summary, Guy Fawkes Night is a unique event that combines elements of history, community and celebration. It's an opportunity for marketers to craft creative and engaging campaigns that appeal to a wide range of consumers. Whether through product offerings, community events or digital campaigns, Bonfire Night offers a fantastic opportunity to connect with audiences and build brand loyalty. I love the story of Bonfire Night, a tradition born from one of the most audacious plots in British history. What began as a religiously charged act of rebellion has become an enduring symbol of British identity, celebrated with fire, light, and the memory of a man who nearly changed the course of history forever. So, the next time you're standing around a bonfire, watching the fireworks burst overhead, remember the history behind the celebration, the politics, the religion, and the story of Guy Fawkes, the man who almost made history with a bang.
Gosh, what a show! The Silly Goose brings a big surprise. A firework egg, ready fried.
Well, that's it. Thanks for joining me. I hope this got you in the mood for Bonfire Night, or to plan a banger, pun intended, of a Guy Fawkes-related marketing campaign. In the next episode, it will be a totally different focus altogether, with a deep dive on the raw dog food industry. To support the podcast, please do subscribe and check out my website, marketingmadeclear.com. If you'd like to suggest topics, correct anything I messed up, or just drop me a line, email will@marketingmadeclear.com. Please follow Marketing Made Clear on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Thanks for all your support. See you next time.